The fourth dimension. Out of this third dimension, there is no time or space. I'm fascinated with Stephen Hawking, many believe to be today's Einstein, and his book, A Brief History of Time, where he explains about the relativity of time and space. Physicists may come to an understanding of how it's possible for some of us to tune into the fourth dimension, where all time or no time is simultaneous. You are still existing in your past, are alive and well, I trust, in your present, and are already existing in your future. Since the only reality there is one's perception of one's experience, and since you are still living in your past, you change your perception of your past and you will have changed your past. That will influence your present and affect your future. Again, that's why it's so important to change past scenes where you remember yourself as a victim. Otherwise, carrying that perception adds to and helps create the victim quality of subsequent experiences that come to you. This is also why it's possible for me to view people still living out particular scenes in their childhood, usually showing me where the person retained a strategic belief from a certain experience, which is now influencing and creating something in his present life. I can still see my grandparents sitting on their front porch when I visited them in the summer, looking at the neighbors with the new car, remarking, "Aren't they uppity?" Hence the belief that to have nice things, to have things easy, to have plenty, you'll be a snob, or you'll look down on others. Those types of beliefs were floating around in my consciousness, contradicting any conscious attempts to manifest abundance, until I became aware and changed them. I'll show you how to do this in a bit. Likewise, I occasionally view past life scenes around someone I'm reading. I tend to de-emphasize past lives because I think that there's the temptation for people to become intrigued with them, anxious to see that they've been someone famous or exciting. That's often because their present life is so boring. The most important, enlightened place to be is in the present. That's where the magic occurs. Most people spend most of their life judging themselves and others in the past or being apprehensive about the future. Being in the present is gearing down to the moment. It's noticing what your steering wheel feels like. It's noticing that there's a fresh bouquet of flowers in the corner of the room. Your life becomes much fuller and enriched when you live in the moment. Additionally, I have found that that's when telepathy occurs, when one person who's being in the moment connects with another who's being in the moment. Being in the moment is being on a particular frequency. I remember being in a crowded room listening to a speaker about whom I had some questions. A woman I know, a lovely, well-loved yoga teacher, was listening to the speaker on the other side of the room. We spotted each other afterwards and had a detailed telepathic conversation in about 1 or 2 seconds. We talked on the phone the next morning to confirm that this had indeed occurred. But I do occasionally see past life scenes around a person, usually to dramatize something that the person is repeating again, to help him wake up and create something different. When I see these scenes, the person is still moving around in that experience, fishing in the boat, wandering the desert, scavenging for food, fighting in a battle, working the land, unloading the ship in the harbor, feeding the children, running the manor. Sometimes it's quite humorous to see how similarly we set things up with our cast of characters. At times, when doing readings, I have experienced the sensation of going into a time warp, being in two time spaces at the same time. The first time this happened, I was reading a woman who was somewhat overweight. I told her that she might not have wrestled with this concept of time, but while I was talking to her then, I was also talking to her in a tavern in Old England. Her name was Sarah, she had a doily on her head, and she was wiping off a counter. I told her that I was saying the same thing to her now that I was saying to her then, now. That I felt that then, she might be using the task of caring for her invalid sister as an excuse to not get out there. From my viewpoint, I felt that she might be doing the same thing with her mother, who was that sister, who I believed was sitting in the car waiting for her. I could see that her mother had suffered a stroke, and this woman was again retreating, and I guessed from the excess weight, buffering herself from many adventures in life. The duty of caring for her mother was again preventing her from opening up to life. I told her that I could see she was a very loving person, and that she would never neglect her mother, but to let her know that it appeared that she had done this before. She might want to try something different this time around. The woman said that yes, her mother was in the car, had suffered a stroke, and that it was just on the way over to our meeting that day that she got the thought that God must just want me to take care of my mother. When my son was 3, I went into his bedroom to tuck him in bed, and he pulled me down and kissed me on the forehead. At that moment, we were in an old village in Europe. I could see everything in the room. He was my father, who I loved very much. He was dying, and I was at his bedside grieving his inevitable passing. He was saying to me, "Don't worry, we'll be together again another time. I'll give you a sign." Years later, I asked my son what he thought about me telling people about that incident. He said, "You forgot to tell them I had on blue pants." For a moment, we both slipped into a past experience, which in the fourth dimension was still occurring. You can learn from your past lives. They're even more instructive when you view or re-experience them for yourself. You can do this with the help of a hypnotherapist or someone adept at doing regressions. Or you can imagine a past life. I once saw a play entitled Saint Joan about the life of Joan of Arc. There was a scene where she was talking to her soldiers about how God talked to her. One of the men scoffed, "Joan, don't you know that's just your imagination?" She replied, "Of course, that's where God gives it to me, in my imagination." So where do you think you get the stuff you imagine with? You carry it in your consciousness, and you are the sum total of all your experiences. So you can relax yourself and sit back and ask to be shown or imagine how you might have known this or that person or type of situation that feels familiar. You won't be that far off. Or you can simply look in your present life, and that will tell you a lot about where you've been, what issues you're still carrying with you, what themes still need to be replayed to heal guilt, fear, pain, to balance judgments, blame, vindictiveness, or bitterness. Already in your future. I remember telling a woman about a man she already knew, whom she just hadn't met yet in the physical dimension. I always caution people about future relationships, and here comes my soulmate spiel, that first of all, like does attract like, and if you're feeling like a half-filled cup looking for someone to come fill your cup, you will attract another half-filled cup. I can always look back and see where I've been in my growth at different times by looking at who I was involved with at the time. So women looking for Mr. Wonderful, or men searching for, as a man from New York put it, Ms. Reitschke, they will attract another who's just about as empty or fulfilled as they are themselves. I ask these people, are you doing for yourself what you would expect or want this person to come into your life and do for you? Because if you're not, there's no way he or she will be able to. It's most often when one has gone on strike, stepped off the well-worn path of soulmate hunters, and returned to or begun creative endeavors, all the things that nurture and feed the soul, even to flow into the wonderful creative expression that can come out of feeling the pain of loneliness, writing about it, singing from that place of hurt inside you, starting to make friends with aloneness. This is when one does indeed meet another who's learned to take care of him or herself. Living in each moment, rather than longingly trying to peek over the horizon to find that significant other, also lets you evolve into what you will need to have become to attract that relationship. So, after my preface about future relationships, I relayed to this woman that in her future she was already having a conversation with someone with lots of wood and parquet floors around him, talking about taking a biplane to Catalina. Several months later, she called to confirm that that moment did indeed occur in the wonderful relationship that had come about. He lived in what they called the treehouse, surrounded with decks and parquet floors, and while sharing each other's dreams one evening, he said that one of his desires was to take a biplane to Catalina. She said that they had moved on from each other. It was very meaningful, but she said, "I thought he was my soulmate." I explained to her that information from the fourth dimension comes in a neutral fashion. It's all equal. It's the flavoring we give it, our own projections, how we anticipate or expect our future to be, projecting expectations or past experiences onto our picture of the future. People always call me and say, "It happened, but not like I thought." Sometimes it's even better than we anticipated, but it's usually just different. Best to live in the moment that was your future and just became your past. This is why it's also very important to know where a reader or seer is coming from. These psychic impressions can only be related from the repertoire or experiences of the reader in his or her life. If you go to someone who thrives on drama or relates to people in life on a personality level, that's the shading you will get when you receive the image or information that's being related. If you find yourself a seer of doom and gloom, that's the context within which information will come across. But then again, you've attracted that person into your life for a reason, haven't you? Maybe to confirm something to yourself, to dramatize something to you that you have felt powerless to look at yourself, to exaggerate the false belief of how powerless you are over your future or your fate. One of the loveliest experiences that I've had in doing readings confirmed to me our ability to take charge of our life and create our own future. Whenever I begin a reading, I always ask that I be given that which is for the person's highest good to receive at that moment. That I only view what will be helpful then to that person, even if it might not make sense for a while. I never hold back what I view. Some people try to urge me on. "Go on, you can say it, I can take it." But I only get information in a positive or preventative way, and only what's for the person's highest good. What that person's higher self wants to send down and make visible to me. I simply view it and relate it back to the person. The experience involved a reading I did quite a while ago for a woman. She was elderly with increasing physical back pain from osteoporosis. She was managing the best she could, had lived life with a metaphysical belief system, and wanted to have some things confirmed to her in a reading. I viewed a scene of her in her future lying in a striped lawn chair, looking very relaxed and peaceful as she gazed out over a well-manicured lawn. It might have been a lovely vacation, visiting a relative. The point of the scene seemed to be to assure the woman that she would be succeeding at slowing down her life to be able to smell the roses along the way, a goal of hers at that time in her life. The same woman came a couple of years later, even more bent from her physical problem. This time, I was given the same scene, but as if the camera moved back to reveal more, or to view it from a new angle, since she had also shifted or moved on in her growth. This time, I could see that she was still lying in the lawn chair, but could see that it was at a nursing home. She was being well cared for, was looking out on the lawn with such a feeling of peace and completion, with a certainty about having done all that she came here to do. I could see that the night of that scene she would pass comfortably and easily in her sleep. As she got up slowly to leave, she said, "Yes, that's how I have planned it for years. I've lived alone and have prepared for the time when I would need others to make me more comfortable. I'm now on my way to that home, and I understand that there's a beautiful lawn to look out on. I just wanted one more reading before I go to confirm what I've set up." That woman was truly an inspiration to me. Awake enough to know that she was the creator of her reality, and having taken charge and assumed total responsibility for her life, needing only to confirm the future that she knew she had already created. Creating your own heaven. The understanding that your thoughts and beliefs go with you is especially dramatized when souls who've passed over come forward in readings, often to convey an impression of where they've landed, where they find themselves. It seems that the thoughts they've carried with them have actually created their own heaven. We know from reports of near-death experiences that the process of leaving the physical body and going to the light is becoming more understood. The sensation of rising up out of the physical body, looking down on the accident or hospital bed, being drawn down a tunnel or hallway towards a magnificent light, being met by loved ones and teachers or guides, then the realization or being informed that the person isn't done here, and an immediate return to the body. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, author of On Death and Dying, who's worked with many terminally ill patients, has found that terminally ill children often get a near-death experience before it's actually their time. They come out of it and sometimes draw her pictures of their heaven, which they've gotten to preview. I know a woman who's had 3 near-death experiences, having a hard time staying on this side. With her last experience several years ago in the hospital with the onset of a rare disease, she went to the light and said that she found herself on a big golden arch. I commented, "Oh no, to live your whole life and end up at McDonald's?" "No, no, no," she replied, "it was a big golden arch carrying me over." She then remembered that she still had 3 sons to raise and returned instantly to her body, lying in the hospital. A few months before I talked to her, she'd been driving along and suddenly realized that now her sons were raised. She was going to need to pay attention to being in the body. I remember hearing a woman on a talk show relating a near-death experience where she found herself in an indescribably beautiful meadow. She said that everything had its own light, even a leaf, and she saw colors between colors, hues no one could ever imagine. She was met by 3 teachers dressed in robes. They met with her and gave her 3 very enlightening bits of wisdom. She remembers saying, "I can't wait to go back and share this knowledge with my friends." She was informed that she could take back 1 of the bits of information, but not the other 2. She said that for 15 years she's been trying to remember what the other 2 pieces of information were. Once a grandfather who'd passed over came forward, relating that he'd landed in the wheat fields of Kansas. All his life he'd looked out on his fields, thinking and feeling with all his heart, wouldn't that be heaven? And most certainly, that's where he finds himself as he reflects back on his life. Another soul projected herself in a garden surrounded by her prized irises, which she had raised with great pride before passing from the body. So I'm setting up a Colorado meadow around dusk when the golden rays of the sun reflect their light on the aspen leaves, making them look like shining pennies. When I told a friend that we create our own heaven, she replied, "Then I'm landing in a See's candy store." I have to add here that again, like attracts like. So when souls come forward who passed over, being on a higher vibration, I only attract those, or am sent those, who have gone to the light, are oriented as to where they are, and come for positive reasons to lend another point of view, which will help the readee's perspective. I rarely attract earthbound souls. I've been asked to do ghost busting, and I've sent a few to the light, but I generally choose to deal with those who are successfully continuing on their paths, oriented and awake. Becoming a conscious creator. Before giving you some specific hints about manifesting or creating and getting what you want in life, let me emphasize again how important it is to first do your homework, clean out the garage, so to speak. With all the old clutter of beliefs, denial, and binding emotions, there's usually no room for wonderful new things, people, and adventures to come into your life. I've mentioned how important it is to ask to be shown or to become aware of past scenes or events which will reveal thoughts and beliefs which have gone into your consciousness or which symbolize those which you brought along with you that are creating your present reality. That's the first step. To actually hook up with what you believe about what you're asking for. Then it's important to rewrite the script, see the scene differently, and feel the difference. See the grandparent or hard-working father who helped along your belief that to earn a living it had to be hard and can't be enjoyable. See that person receiving so much abundance and so many blessings, with plenty of time to enjoy life and it all being effortless. See the person in your past who may have abused you, looking radiant and feeling well-loved, with no need to project his own self-scorn or unhappiness onto you, adding to your belief that you're not worth much. See the employer who fired you, sitting down with you and communicating with you on a higher level of understanding that doesn't threaten your own self-worth. See the past lover, being clear and honest with you about why he or she feels it was time to part in a way that doesn't threaten you, taking time to finish up old business. See the teacher who embarrassed you and added or exaggerated your belief that ideas that come from you are dumb. See that teacher smiling at you and praising you for your creative contributions and your incredible uniqueness. See the scene of the disaster or loss where you took on guilt, feeling that you could have prevented it, done more, or that you caused it. And see the victim, in or out of the body, talking to you about why they needed that experience, or why they chose to go out at that time. Know that you were not assigned the role of playing God in their script, and feel the resulting emotions. Then try to follow along that path in your imagination and see where that road would have taken you and where you might be now. When you can do this, feeling the resulting emotions and seeing or knowing details of that journey, you have then created and activated a parallel reality that will start to influence your current one, the one that you're paying attention to. For example, you might recreate the breakup of a painful past relationship, visualizing a loving conversation with understanding on both sides, mutually deciding that it's time to move on separate new paths, and progressing on from that with greater understanding of yourself, feeling grateful for the gifts you came together to give each other, and thereby feeling more enriched and fulfilled rather than rejected and empty. Following that path, you might see yourself moving on to better and better relationships rather than repeating the old theme over and over, which would begin to reflect your light and greatness back to you, which would lead you to more freedom to express yourself, wonderful successes and creative achievements. When I took one of my classes through this exercise, one woman, who was trying to move on to new ways with men, saw a significant day in her childhood when she was 4 or 5 years old. She was standing in front of her house and saw her father walking up the sidewalk on his way home from work. "It's Daddy!" she felt herself exclaim. She saw herself run down the sidewalk and jump into his arms to give him a big hug. The woman tended to put men on pedestals way above herself. In relationships, when men turned out to be human and real, she would turn away feeling rejected and disillusioned. So she changed the scene and saw her father see her in front of the house, and watched him run down the sidewalk to give her a hug, yelling, "It's Carol!" She felt a definite shift in her current relationship in the next week. Another woman who had a hard time letting go of money for fear that she'd become poor was reminded of a scene when she was 7 or 8. She viewed the summer when her parents had to send her back to Austria to live with the grandparents because they were too poor to take care of her since their arrival in America. She looked up and saw an airplane flying overhead and thought, "That plane's going to America where my parents are. I'm here because we're poor." Liz changed the scene and turned the plane into a helicopter, which was coming to pick her up to take her back to her parents, because the universe provides more than enough for everyone, if they believe it and don't need the experience of poverty. Then she thought, "What the heck?" And she changed the helicopter into a Learjet coming to return her to America. The following week, Liz found $400 unaccounted for in one of her bank accounts. Another woman I know was having a very difficult time getting out into the world after a divorce, had become almost paralyzed with her fears. She was unable to make decisions and felt fearful in any new situations without a man to hold on to and to help guide her. She viewed a scene from her childhood, a morning before school in New York City, where she was raised. Her mother always forced her to eat all of her oatmeal, which would make her late and necessitated her having to be led to school through the crowded sidewalks of New York by her older brother. She changed the scene to seeing herself walking comfortably to any destination, feeling the sensation of the female within herself mothering her and making her feel safe wherever she was. She followed that feeling along possible paths, which would lead her to a new house, new positive relationships, and a job. She's practiced bringing in that mindset or consciousness whenever she starts to feel fearful. Then she immediately turns to the mother within herself in order to feel safe. A man in her life might come and go, but she will always have that safety somewhere within herself. How to get what you ask for. First of all, as I've mentioned, become aware of what you're putting out there. What do you continue to talk about? What seems to be important to you to prove to the world? The areas in your life that occupy the most space in your consciousness are the ones that manifest into physical form in your life. Your thoughts are energy, etheric energy. Your physical frame hangs on your etheric body a bit like a skyscraper hangs on a steel frame. It's your etheric body that often leaves your physical form to travel to the astral plane above the physical plane for astral projection adventures. It's your etheric body that continues on out of this body, between dimensions, and into subsequent life experiences. Your etheric energy surrounds your physical body and is sometimes viewed in color variations depending on your mood, known as your aura. You can intensify your etheric energy by visualizing a ball of light or energy directly above your head, feeling the light come in through your crown, the top of your head, and filling you up all the way to the tips of your fingertips and toes. Then, feeling or seeing the outline of your physical body getting brighter as if surrounded by a neon light, you can ask your body to give you a sign when it's filled with enough energy. Mine gives me a sign like in the old laboratories, and it sort of goes, and then I know it's got enough. Then, you can visualize a ball in front of you. That's your new thought form that you're going to send out. You can name it Abundance, Joy, or Myrtle. Then feel the energy that you brought in through your crown flowing out of you, through your eyes, fingertips, whatever feels comfortable, and rushing into the ball before you. See and feel the ball becoming denser and more compact until it too gives you a sign that it's filled with enough. Then visualize the ball shooting out as if from a cannon out into the universe, exploding way out there. You will have sent out a positive thought form that has a very good chance of manifesting. You can feed it additional energy if you like in the next few weeks. Unfortunately, the most powerful thought forms that we quite naturally send out are those which are emotionally charged with negative emotion. Sometimes those are thought bombs, and you know when you've received one of those, when a thought of someone immediately pops into your head. This is also the nature of much of our sleepwalking manifesting, coming from bitter thoughts, vindictiveness, and blame. The four-step formula. I like to incorporate all that I've mentioned about manifesting into a concise formula. First, consider what it is you're asking for. You may be asking from the level of the little self that's influenced by social consciousness, which says that more is better, fame is greater, that you're more credible if you've been on TV, that the ideal mate should look like this or such and such. When you ask from that level, you often will get what you ask for, but it'll be short-lived. Best that you ask from the level of your higher self. Ask that you attract the job, relationship, opportunity, etc., that's for your highest good. Leave it up to your higher self. The most spiritual way I can put it is that your little self don't know beans. The opportunity might not look like you thought it or he should, but it or he will connect with the heart and take you much more directly down the center of your road. So be sure to ask from a higher level. Second, look into your life to see if you might already have what it is you're asking for. It may already be there, but you don't recognize it. We are so geared to what we think things should look like that we often don't see them right in front of us. But this will require some honesty. I remember reading a man several years ago who was being fired from an executive position with a large airline. I taught him all I knew about manifesting and how to apply it to creating a new job. He came for an update a couple of years later and exclaimed, "This metaphysical stuff doesn't work. In 2 years I haven't been able to manifest a job." In the next sentence, he related about how his ex-wife was still having him followed to prove that he had a job so she would get more alimony. I said to him, "I think you're a terrific manifester. You're really wanting to create no job to not have to pay more alimony." That's how honest you have to be with yourself when you awaken and look at you in your life. I can recall another client, a woman, who continually lamented the fact that she didn't have an intimate, exclusive relationship with a man. I suggested that maybe she'd had one all along with her analyst, whom she'd been seeing for 10 years. Maybe if she wrapped that up, she'd create some room for another kind of intimate, exclusive relationship with a man. So you may already have what it is you're asking for in your life, and you just don't recognize it. Third, as we've covered previously, scan or search for the beliefs that you hold that may contradict what you're asking for. When we put out mixed messages to the cosmos, we can't get clear responses back. And last, but most potent, be of the consciousness of that which you want to attract. We really learn it backwards. We learn that if we're empty enough, hurting, or have suffered enough, Eventually, God will look down and bless us or send us a gift. Walt Disney taught us to wish upon a star. When we're in a wish-wanting consciousness, we're the empty well, the empty cup, waiting to be filled. As always, like attracts like, and that consciousness will attract lack. If you want someone to love you, be loving yourself. When my children suddenly get calls from friends, I say to them, "You must have been feeling friendly." Feeling friendly attracts friends. If you're desiring to manifest abundance, be feeling your wealth now. I remember when my ex-husband moved out. The next week, everything started going wrong on the house. I knew that on a metaphysical level, my higher self was sending me these happenings to help me find my power, to become sovereign. Unfortunately, we don't do this until we're challenged. I could be philosophical about it until the refrigerator broke down and started leaking food. Now, when these zingers zap you, it's important to feel the emotion that hits you from the experience. That will direct you to the area of your being that's being threatened, that needs to be healed, for which purpose you've created the situation in the first place. When you run from the pain, like many people who continually claim, "No, I'm fine," it throws you into denial. You will then end up having to recreate another and another similar experience until you finally pay attention. So, after my initial panic reaction, I calmed myself to let myself feel where I was being threatened. It was in my solar plexus, the power center, that chung feeling. Now the next thoughts that you think after the emotion are the thoughts that will be creating your next, even immediate, reality. I realized that I had a lurking belief that my husband, males, were the source of my abundance. If I continued with those thoughts of, "Oh no, now that he's gone, how will I ever replace the refrigerator? Now everything's going to break down," then that would have been my upcoming reality. So I caught myself and reaffirmed that the universe is the source of my abundance, not any one person, job, or opportunity. Affirmations are useful at that point to replace an old negative or unproductive thought, but first you have to catch the old one. Many people mystically repeat affirmations or positive statements, thinking that the repetition of those statements makes magic. The purpose of affirmations is simply to let go of an old thought or belief and affirm a new one, thereby pointing you in a new direction towards what you want to bring into your life. You cannot have two thoughts in the same place. Then, I knew that it was very important that day to be conscious of my wealth, to be feeling my wealth. In a way, it's counting your blessings, but most importantly, it's being of that consciousness now. So I wore my pearls while I saw my clients that day and felt such gratitude for so many blessings, healthy, bright children, a beautiful place to live, etc. That day, every client overpaid me, not consciously knowing why, and my sporadic purchase of a lottery ticket at the grocery store won me $50. It just kept coming in all day. Unfortunately, in the beginning, it takes a lot of discipline to stay awake, to be able to hold that consciousness. But it does get easier and more automatic with time and practice. Some form of daily meditation is imperative. You get cumulative advantages and can eventually go to that still, quiet place within you instantly in meditation to see clearly, hear louder, and understand way beyond what you thought you'd ever be able to comprehend. Meditation is absolutely necessary to be able to connect yourself with your higher self. A method for releasing. An easy method, which I recommend, to help release concerns in your life, to get them from the level of your little self up to your higher self, is to relax yourself during a set time of day, and again before bed, and visualize yourself in your own heaven. Some like the feeling of being by water, some prefer mountains, some find themselves in arid surroundings. You can create your own heaven or garden, or go back to a pleasant scene from your past. Feel or see yourself there. A short distance before you, see a huge, colorful air balloon. See the vivid colors clearly. Then see the wicker basket underneath the balloon. In that basket of the air balloon, put in all your cares and worries, any people or situations that are troubling you, landlords, employers, relatives, banks, debts, troublesome cars, children, unresolved situations. You can even visualize the lost object on a shelf in your basket. Then surround the whole basket with white light, its pure love and energy, its intensified etheric energy, and see the air balloon slowly lift up and off the ground, slowly rising up into the sky. The minute you get a twang about anyone in that basket, bring the balloon down again and feel yourself directly in front of that person, both of you surrounded by light. Looking in his or her face, look directly into that person's eyes, looking for the light in that person's eyes. Start to feel your oneness with that person, the part of us that's all connected, that's all the same, the God force. Then when you can start to feel even a glimmer of light in that person or feel love for that person, you can let the balloon go again. Feel it carrying all your concerns up to a higher level. When you can do this effectively and feel a sense of letting go of all that your little self was trying too hard to figure out, several things can happen. You may get a phone call the next morning from someone who's ready to resolve a misunderstanding with you, or who's calling, often unknowingly, with an idea that will be a solution to your dilemma. You may receive a letter in 2 or 3 days, a response to something you put out there. Or you may wake up with a solution that you hadn't thought of on the level of your little self, that's come to you from the level of your higher self where there are infinite possibilities. Or you might simply feel a strong feeling of relief, release, or surrender, and a peaceful knowing that things are working out on a higher level. The benefits from being a conscious, free creator. As you start to live your life in an awakened state, you will become more aware of synchronicity, the psychic or seemingly coincidental timing of events or circumstances in your life. You will accidentally run into the person you needed to see. Someone will be giving away the exact part for your car that you've been trying to track down. The sweater that you hoped to purchase at the sale is being returned while you're there. The day that you decide to sell your house, someone browsing the neighborhood arrives at your door inquiring as to whether you'd ever consider selling it. Or, once you've already sold the house and are ready to move, the termite inspector buys your ping pong table that you aren't able to take with you. These things were happening like that all along, in the perfect flow. Your life isn't getting more mystical. You just weren't paying attention. You will also have greater clarity in the moment, rather than in retrospect. You will be hooked up or aligned with your higher self to the degree that you have an awareness of exactly why you're experiencing what you're right in the middle of, the conversation, the challenge, the decision, and even have a hint of the outcome before the conclusion has come about. We are used to the incredible wisdom that comes to us in retrospect when we think back or relive a previous situation, and we long to have such insight sooner, thinking or knowing on our feet, as it were. This starts to happen more and more as you become more accustomed to this awakened state. As you will start to become more conscious of your abilities to manifest and feel more comfortable with them, and as you're able to sort out the contradictions in your consciousness sooner, the physical manifestation of your clearer thought forms appear to be happening faster. Or, to say it another way, you get what you want faster. You start to transcend the boundaries or illusion of time in this dimension. And you will get twanged less and less by people or situations that used to take you by surprise. You even start to think, now what used to bother me about that kind of situation? How did it used to make me feel? This comes from the greater degree of detachment that grows in you as you begin to heal yourself as the awakened spiritual warrior. You are of the world but not in it, yet fully awake and not in denial. And the themes that you've looked at and have dealt with are now done. Forever. That's my F word. Finally, you'll be able to let go of things faster, quicker, and more efficient releasing. You'll feel the twang, be able to immediately go to what belief is being threatened in you, heal it, replace it with a new, more productive, positive thought or belief, or simply see the situation differently and move on with a little more light. And finally, your whole reality will seem to shift. Like the woman who said, there aren't as many jerks out there anymore. It'll seem that there's more love for you out there, that someone took you off the list of those who were being blackballed or excluded from opportunities. It'll seem as if your life has suddenly started to be filled with lovely, full moments that totally engage you, completely distracting you from your past or your future. I look forward to reading you, and much love.